two Gospels, and there's a lot of similarities, but they have slightly different details, and it's good to be able to reflect on all of that. So as you hear these words, try and put yourself in that position. What would it have been like to be part of that story, or maybe an observer of what was going on? Let's come and hear God's word to us. And Chris and Jan are going to read this for us. Thanks, guys.
So I'm reading from Matthew. Matthew 15, 21 to 28. Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him, crying out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession." Jesus did not answer a word. So his disciples came to him and urged him, "Send her away, for she keeps crying out after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." The woman came and knelt before him. "Lord, help me," she said. He replied, "It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." "Yes, Lord," she said, "but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted." And her daughter was healed from that very hour.
Verses I'm reading from are from Mark 7, verse 24 to 30. This is very blunt and to the point compared with the sophistication of Matthew, but it's really good. Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know it, yet he could not keep his presence secret. In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an evil spirit came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek born in Syrian Phoenicia. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. "First let the children eat all they want, he told her, "for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs." "Yes, Lord," she replied, "but even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Then he told her, "For such a reply, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." She went home and found her child lying on the bed and the demon gone.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. I don't know if you've spent much time thinking about this story. You may have read it, you may have come across it. Have you spent a lot of time thinking about it? I will admit, it is one of those stories where I look at it and ask, really? There's some questions that it raises in my mind. And that's one of the reasons we included it in this series, as it raises those questions that we don't, I think, get anywhere else. So it has something important, something revelatory to say to us. So some of the things that get my attention in this story. The disciples, they have a bit part. There's just one request to Jesus. Get rid of her. They don't help at all. They've got nothing useful to say. It demonstrates their lack of interest in this woman and her daughter. Is that what we should be expecting of people who follow Jesus? There's the way Jesus himself seems to initially ignore her, even as she cries out for mercy. There's the way Jesus speaks to her, prompting a gentleman called Leo Ranzelin, I probably pronounced that incorrectly, to write an article called "Did Jesus Call a Woman a Dog?" He argues strongly that that is not the case, but we do need to do some work to try and understand what was going on. There's the suggestion that God's blessing is only available to a chosen race and not to everyone. Something that we might struggle with today. So some questions that this passage raises in my mind. But as we dig beneath the surface, we come across a story that is rich in meaning, that's powerful in what it says, and that could be seen as a turning point in the scope of the mission of Jesus. So we're going to spend a bit of time this morning unraveling it all and working out what it has to say to us. Again, what would it have felt like if you were in that story, if you were the woman in the story, desperate for something to be done for your daughter and feeling that you weren't getting what you wanted? Maybe what would it be like to one of the disciples as you try to work out what was going on? How would you have changed? What deeper insights into God and his grace would you have gone away with? As we've seen, there are two accounts to this meeting, one in Matthew's Gospel, the other in Mark, and they both basically tell the same story. Jesus and his followers go to an area called Tyre. A woman comes to Jesus asking him to help her demon-possessed daughter. Jesus, using picture language, using metaphor, speaks about the priority of the Jews for blessing and that they should not be neglected to bless others. The woman, engaging using similar metaphorical language, argues that even if that is the case, even if the Jews should have priority, other people should be able to expect what is left over and to experience that blessing. Jesus, recognizing and responding to her faith, commends her and grants her request of freedom for her daughter. That's basically what is going on. But there are some interesting differences in the two accounts, both in relation to the disciples and the details of the exchange between the woman and Jesus, and we will look at that shortly. But first, let's do a bit of scene setting. If you're not intimately familiar with the geography of Palestine, you might not know where Jesus was and where he was going and what was going on and the significance of that. Or what was happening in the gospel story just before this happened and afterwards. Where does this all fit together? And all of these questions throw light on what is going on. So it's worth exploring briefly. Now, just before this event, in both gospels, and you can read it, Jesus had been healing and teaching, and then he finds himself in conflict with a group of people called the Pharisees. This was a group who sought to maintain religious purity among God's people. A great goal, but they went about it in slightly the wrong way. And this, some people out of their number had traveled from Jerusalem to see Jesus, who was up by the Sea of Galilee, so a bit north of Jerusalem. And they were concerned about what they saw. And they saw some of the followers of Jesus eating food without having carried out ritual purification of their hands. It's not that they hadn't washed their hands before they ate. There was a ritual you were supposed to go through, according to the Pharisees, and they were not doing this. And so they complain to Jesus. And Jesus is robust in his response. In Matthew 15:7, in Mark 7:6, he calls them hypocrites. He's not taking any lessons from them. He accuses them of putting on a public show of faith and holiness, but in reality being a long way away from God. If we think back to the Sermon on the Mount, which we were looking at a few weeks ago, we're left wondering how this relates to the challenge of Jesus to allow someone who's hit us on one cheek to strike the other as well. Jesus doesn't seem to be acting in that way. And it demonstrates there's a lot of nuance in here. We've got to think carefully about our responses. There are some times, some things that happen where we need a strong and robust response, and Jesus is modeling that here. And we need to know when it's appropriate to do that. And sometimes we need to accept and absorb criticism and accusation. which in any particular situation will advance God's purposes, which will correct error, which will point out truth, which will demonstrate God's grace. Challenging questions to think about and pray into as we think about how we respond to the situations we find ourselves in. So Jesus accuses the Pharisees of hypocrisy, and then he develops this theme as he turns back to the crowds that were around him that he was teaching, and he speaks about the importance of purity, which is what the Pharisees were focused on, but showing that the purity that really mattered was not about what we eat or how we prepare to eat, but showing in what we say, as this demonstrates what we are thinking and feeling. What Jesus is saying is it's what's inside you, your thoughts and your desires and your emotions that we see expressed in what you say. It's in that that we can determine whether you were living that pure life that God calls for. So there was this confrontation between Jesus and this group. And I think it's probably one of the reasons why Jesus left the area. He wanted to get a break from this particular group of people and the confrontation they'd brought with them. And that's probably what his disciples thought as well. We could just do with a few days off. And so you get this account that they go to this place, they go into a house. Jesus didn't want anyone to know that they were there. But it didn't quite work out that way. And they probably got a bit of a shock. So a bit of geography. Jesus is traveling from the northwest region of the Sea of Galilee, roughly in the middle of the map on the screen. And he's going up into Tyre on the Mediterranean coast, that orange line that goes up to the left-hand side of the map. That was the journey that he was on. And it's here that in Tyre that he meets this woman. And then after this meeting, he travels a further 20 miles or so further north into non-Jewish territory. And then it takes a semicircular route back to the east side of the Sea of Galilee, those green and purple lines on the map. So that's the journey that Jesus and his disciples were on. We do not know why he takes this particular trip. But if nothing else, it shows that he is prepared to go out of Jewish territory and to meet with other people groups. And even when he gets back onto the east side of Galilee, he's in a mixed group of Jews and Gentiles. It was a mixed population there. And we'll see the significance of that later. There's a real significance to that. And Jesus would have been aware that there were some people in the area of Tyre who knew about him, who were interested in what he was saying, as they beforehand had taken the time to travel to listen to him. In Mark 3, verse 8, when they heard all he was doing, all Jesus was doing, many people came to him from Judea, Jerusalem, Idumea, and the regions across the Jordan and around Tyre and Sidon. So his fame was spread, he was known in that area, and he knew that there were at least some people who were interested in what he had to say. Whether this woman had met him before, whether this woman was one of those who'd come to see him, we don't know. But while he's in Tyre, he encounters this woman, and in Matthew 15, 22, for example, introduces her into the story. Someone who's from this area, who is in deep distress. She recognizes somehow the significance of who Jesus is. She acknowledges his authority and cries out for his help. And here we see one of the differences between the two accounts. If you were listening closely, you would have heard that in Matthew's gospel, when this woman approaches and cries out for help, Jesus doesn't say anything. He doesn't reply. It's left to his disciples to engage, and they just get fed up with this woman. They've got no thought or desire to help her. They just get fed up, and they ask Jesus to send her away. And that leads Jesus to have a discussion with them, sort of seemingly to confirm what they were thinking. He says in chapter 15, verse 24, that he had only been sent to the people of Israel, not to those outside of that group of people. He was speaking to the disciples, but presumably the woman would have been able to hear. And so there's that idea in Matthew's gospel that this woman is not going to get what she wants. Jesus ignores her. The disciples want him to send her away. Jesus, in a sort of side conversation with the disciples, says, well, my job is only to bless the people of Israel. So by implication, not this woman. But in Mark's gospel, chapter 7:24, Jesus does respond to her straight away. So there's something different going on. But the story in Matthew is worth exploring. On the one hand, he's repeating what he said to his disciples when he'd earlier sent them out on mission. In chapter 10, Jesus sends out his 12 disciples saying, do not go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. So he's saying to them, your job is to go and speak to people who are part of the people of God. And here he seems to be saying that the same restrictions apply to him. But it's not that simple. Because his actions earlier in the gospel tell a different story. In Matthew 8:13, Jesus heals the servant of a Roman centurion, not a Jew. And as part of that event, he looks forward to a time when people from all over the world will come and enter into God's blessing and feast in his kingdom. In chapter 8:28-34, Jesus frees two demon-possessed men from the region of the Gadarenes, which was mainly inhabited by non-Jewish people. So it seems that the restriction on blessing people outside of the Jewish nation was not absolute, maybe only temporary, and maybe even that temporary status was coming to an end. And what happens next is so insightful as it summarizes how the relationship between God's people, the Jews, and the rest of the world was supposed to work itself out. Because the woman does not give up. Even probably hearing these words of Jesus, talking to the disciples and saying, yeah, my job is for other people, not this woman. She comes to Jesus. She kneels down in front of him, recognizing his authority, her understanding of what he could do for her, and asks him directly again for help. And again, the response of Jesus would not have been very encouraging. But she's up to the challenge. The use of the word dogs does come across as strange to us. And it may well have reflected some of the ways that Jews spoke about non-Jews. But I think it's primarily picture language to make a point, and it's not speaking badly against the woman. And it's important to note the subtle differences in the accounts. I sort of summarize the key things here. In Matthew chapter 15, where Jesus says, it's not right, she says, yeah, it is. She's able to respond robustly. There was a conversation sort of between equals going on here. Whereas in Mark, Jesus is saying, yeah, let's do this first. And she recognizes that and says, yeah, okay, but can I have what's left over? In Mark, the words of Jesus offer a bit more hope. He seems to be saying that while the Jewish people should be the first recipients of blessing, this does not necessarily mean there isn't anything left over for anyone else. And the woman responds, acknowledging the priority of the Jews in God's plans, but simply looking for what's left over. In Matthew's gospel, there is no such hope expressed. Jesus says bread should not be taken from the children and given to the dogs. And so the woman, as I say, responds more forcefully, directly contradicting what Jesus has said. We get the sense of a mother who's prepared to go to any length necessary to get what she so desperately wants for her child. But there's a bigger story being played out here as well. Because in this exchange, we get a reminder expressed powerfully by both Jesus and the woman of God's plans for the world and how his blessing was intended to extend all over it. Centuries before, when God first called Abraham to be the father of the Jewish people, one of the things that God said to him was that all the nations of the earth will be blessed through him. We get this way back in Genesis 12. Something that in general, Abraham failed to do in so many ways. His son Isaac, his grandson Jacob, they didn't really do any better. But the promise was still out there that God's purposes was that his people would bless the world. In Psalm 72, probably a psalm asking God to bless Solomon, there's a statement about all nations being blessed through him. When God spoke through Isaiah about a servant that he was going to send, he spoke about him being a light to the Gentiles and bringing God's salvation to the ends of the earth. Words that an old man called Simeon prophesied over Jesus shortly after he was born. And as Paul recognizes when writing to the Galatians, this promise of God has been fulfilled in the death and resurrection of Jesus. He redeemed us in order that the blessing given to Abraham might come to the Gentiles through Christ Jesus. God's plan was to bring his blessing to the whole world through his chosen people. And with very few exceptions, those people and their rulers had failed in that task. And it was down to Jesus, the perfect Jew, to make it all possible. And this, I think, is what's behind the exchange going on between Jesus and the woman. Recognizing that this is how God intended things to work, that the Jews should receive the first blessing, but that that blessing was not just something they could hold on to for themselves, but given to them so that they could bless all the nations of the world. And then Jesus recognizes the faith of this woman, her understanding of how she is to be a recipient of God's blessing. And he speaks words of comfort and healing and blessing over her and her daughter. A great result for the woman and her daughter. A step forward in God's plan for the world. But was it also a teaching moment for Jesus to communicate something to his disciples and to us? Because they, in some ways, like the Pharisees, were seeing themselves as separate from everyone else. Whereas Jesus was wanting them to recognize that their place of real privilege was so that they could be a blessing to the world. And this is made totally clear in his command to them after his death and resurrection, that we find in Matthew 28, for them to go into all the nations, in all the world, and make disciples. No restriction, no geographical, no ethnic boundaries. And yet it took some time for that lesson to sink in. Peter is still struggling with the concepts in Acts 10 when he meets up with Cornelius. But it's a start. So in this story, Jesus meets this woman. They have this rather robust exchange. An exchange that in the context of the day would have been sort of acceptable. And it results with these wonderful insights into how God is going to bless the world and this woman's daughter being healed. But there's something that happens immediately afterwards that I think is quite amazing and wonderful, that would have reinforced the lesson for the disciples. Because as we saw earlier, Jesus leaves Tyre, he goes up into Sidon, and then back around to the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee. Matthew has him just going back to the Sea of Galilee. Mark adds the detail that it was to the east, in the region of the Decapolis, an area inhabited by a mixture of Jews and non-Jews. And so a group of people gather around him, and he teaches them, as he does. And then after that, he feeds a group of 4,000 men along with women and children. And the disciples are involved in distributing the food to the people. We call this the feeding of the 4,000. And it was a group made up of people who were both Jews and non-Jews. So it seems that on this occasion, there was no distinction. They all sat down together. They were blessed in exactly the same way. And those early disciples of Jesus, from a position of wanting Jesus to send this woman away, are engaged in directly sharing the blessing of God with Jews and non-Jews alike. It's a wonderful worked illustration of what Jesus had done for the woman and what he'd said to her, and an opportunity for the disciples to reflect further on the scope of what Jesus had come to do, and that maybe they needed to get rid of some of their prejudice and preconceptions. There's a lot in this story. It raises some challenging questions. But I want to leave you with 2 points drawn from it. It is firstly a story of persistent faith. The woman, she knows what she wanted, and she was willing to powerfully and persistently bring her requests to Jesus. And she does so in a way that is consistent with the overall plans and purposes that God has for the world. A great example of persistent faith in prayer. One for us to take on board and engage in. To be aware of the need that is around us. To be conscious of God's plans and purposes. And to pray for God to pour out his blessing. And an encouragement to not give up. But it is also a story that stretches the disciples' understanding of the scope of what Jesus was there to do, and that draws them into extending that work to all groups of people without boundaries or limitations. A reminder to the disciples that they were in a place of blessing, but that this was not just for their benefit, but so that they could be a blessing to others. And it's so, so important that we recognize that the wonderful blessings that we have received from God call on us to be channels of blessing to others. Even to those we might think are outside the scope of what God can do. This story reminds us there are no limits with God, and there should not be with us. Are there any areas of ministry to which God has been calling you and you have been resisting? If so, this story has something powerful and challenging to say. The Pharisees we saw at the start of the story present a picture of people with a desire for religious purity, and that's good, but they were constrained by it. The example of Jesus shows a generous, lavish pouring out of God's grace without restriction. Let's have a deep, deep desire to model ourselves on the example of Jesus and to be similar blessings to those around us. I'm going to pray, and then our service will be over. But please do continue to think and to reflect on this story and the challenges and the questions it raises, and to think about how we can be part of God's plans and purposes of blessing for people in our families, in our neighborhoods, in our town, in those we spend time with. Father, I want to thank you for your word. I want to thank you for Jesus and the way in which he engaged, initially seeming to push away, but then to reach out in blessing to this woman. And thank you for what it tells us about the way in which you work, and that amazing reminder that you pour your blessings upon us so that, yes, we can experience those for ourselves, but so that we can be a blessing to a world that so desperately needs to experience your grace and your goodness. Father, help us to be those people who recognize that there are no boundaries with you in terms of the outpouring of your grace. And help us to be willing to be part of that wherever you call us, whatever you ask of us, that we may be people who bring your grace and your goodness into the many situations we find ourselves in this week. Father, it'd be such a wonderful thing if the light of Jesus could shine through us into so many places of darkness this week. And Father, if we need to experience that light for ourselves to dispel areas of darkness and doubt and suffering and pain in our lives, Father, pour out your blessing upon us and help us to know your goodness and your grace. We thank you for this time together. Pray your rich blessing upon us and that we too may be a blessing. In the name of Jesus. Amen. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for sharing with us. And may God bless you in the week that is ahead.